Hey, everybody, welcome to Broken Shovel Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. Date of release is 4/16. All information we have is current to that date. I am Lucas, and joined as always by
Eric.
Eric, who seems a little bummed out today, and I understand why, but we'll get into it later. So today we're talking about climate mitigation on the homestead. Steps you can take to minimize the inevitable weather events that are caused by climate change and could adversely affect your ability to grow and produce your own food. I didn't really look into animal protection at all. We can just sort of generalize on that.
Yeah, I think that goes back into my 30-30-30 rule. Like, you just exist. Like, there's not going to be like climate change is going to affect the animal populations, but not in a way that's going to affect the homestead because we're already very rural. We're already dealing with backyard animals and whatnot. I mean, I have when we get to On the Homestead, I have a story about this week that is very just kind of one of those just the horrors of homesteading with chickens. But yeah, I don't feel like the animals are as big a factor because there's still good foraging. As long as we follow some of the mitigation goals of that we have of like one of my notes is good variety of tree species in your tract of forest, which was something we both are very much working on a lot, allowing a lot of brush and what we both have grow a lot of berries and other stuff of like so animals have their foraging, so they're less likely to come into our garden and spaces and to and affect our tract of homestead.
Yeah, and Eric put it really clearly there that why we're talking about this, because this is something that we are both thinking about, especially after the growing season in 2023. I do really quickly, just for the benefit of the listeners, want to just define mitigation. It's not something you really say every day unless you're heading to HR, I think. But so the action of reducing the severity, seriousness, or painfulness of something. So it's something that's already happening. You can't stop it from happening, but you can reduce it from happening. One of the most popular things that you'll see, especially in the Midwest, is wildfire mitigation. Actually, a friend of mine from high school, that is what he does in Utah. He provides landscape fire mitigation for properties, for if there was a fire. The landscape itself will stop it from damaging their personal property, which is pretty fascinating. But yeah, so mitigation, and Eric put it really clearly why we're talking about this, but let's go in a little more in depth on why this is such a concern for us off of last year.
Yeah, storms, floods, heat.
Storms, floods, and heat. Yeah, last year was rough. So wildfire in Western Canada, smoke pretty much blanketed the area weeks for at a time.
Yep, we had, which we very much reduced the quality of sun that we got.
And the quality of the air that not only we breathe but the plants breathe. It put a lot of duress on plants, which are natural air scrubbers.
They're air scrubbers, but it's also good because they are it's I always think it's good stress because it's I mean it gave them CO2 more CO2 to eat.
Yes, that is true. But I think we're giving them enough
Yes, we are giving them enough and
already.
we're getting to those tipping points where I mean it's like the ocean right now. They're like the ocean is warming so rapidly because it is set or hit its CO2 sink limit.
Yes. And then as far as heat goes, I don't think we were really devastated by it last year.
No, and I think the smoke helped with that is like so in the Midwest and in the South saw extreme temps. They had like what two wet bulb situations in Louisiana and in Texas throughout last summer, and we didn't see that as much, but we had it get crazy close to wet bulb conditions up here?
Yeah, I was on, I recorded an episode of a podcast. I was a guest on a show, and I'll talk more about it when it's coming out. But the host lives in Brazil, and we were sort of talking about high temps. And of course, I was having to convert Celsius on the fly from what they were telling me. But they were talking about they had a neighbor die during it was nearly 148 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah. In Brazil, which is really hot. So, and then rain. This is something we're going to get into, especially, you know, like Eric said, trees. We got so much rain last year from a combination of effects. El Nino, the smoke, again, because the smoke particulates in the air, it's easier for condensation to form a raindrop around them, etc. Nothing we haven't talked about before. Yeah. So Eric and I are constantly talking about our, you know, on the show, but also, you know, when we're hanging out and talking or texting or whatever, and about what we're changing this year to have more success. Uh-huh. And to continue to grow and to not waste our time, effort, money, souls. And I think that's the kind of long and short of what we're going to talk about today. Where do you think is a good place to start?
I mean, do we want to start with like my frustrations in my research, or like the actual things that we are physically doing for mitigation?
Let's talk about mitigation and sort of reserve your frustrations when we start talking about next week's episode and on the homestead. Okay.
All right.
So just bottle that rage down and that anxiety down and pretend it's not there. Like right. A real American.
Yep. So, like, my first big thing is that my garden, due to years of having to compete with mint, I have just steadily been sinking lower and lower and lower and lower in my garden, to where this past year it got so bad that there were weeks at a time over the summer, and we talked about this in the last summer, I could not physically go in my garden. I had to like put things down to use as stepping stones because the ground was so saturated that if I stepped off of my stepping stones, I just sunk into inches of mud, and my plants all just suffered and struggled because of that. So my first real goal of the year is getting the entire level of my bed up, but then also setting it at a slight east to west angle, because that's the way most of my yard slopes. That way that I have at really good drainage off of that new raised areas, and water will potentially get in the garden, water my plants, and then drain right off the excess.
Right on. Yeah, and what Eric experienced last year, what, you know, and not to be pointing fingers, but is a lack of mitigation, right? So the garden just was. There was no intervention on Eric's part, and then it got to a point where it was too late.
Intervention against a different issue.
Different issue, yeah, but it caused another issue, and then by the time it was happening, it was too late to do anything about it. And there was a pretty significant loss in what you were able to produce.
I barely grew anything.
Yeah, so
I had very little actual harvestable last year.
And I don't mean any of that to be accusatory or finger-pointing. I'm just stating that's what happened.
I could have done more, but I also, like, I do also have good... I have good barriers set up for, like, because I do have a wall of mint that will, like, sit there, and once I get it raised up, that wall of mint will just eat water and keep the water from, like, coming off of the yard and road right into the garden.
Yeah, and, you know, so another thing you might want to consider maybe is mulching, because that'll sort of retain the good moisture if you're setting up a garden to run off. You know, it's now you're having to strike a balance of runoff and staying with the plants, which is just a huge pain in the butt, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, but I see it. I've made this work in the past, so I do. I'm not completely shooting in the dark on what I'm doing.
Okay, are you adding any drainage, or I'm just letting it go?
I'm adding material to really just kind of. I just really want to just get it up and like. I say a slope, but it's going to be like negligible. Like it's going to be one side's like, going to be at like 6 inches, and the other side's going to be at 4. So it's going to be
so very, like 12 degrees, maybe,
yeah, like, okay. If that. Like very, very, very mild. Like hopefully not enough to, if we do have a lot of rain, cause like what you're thinking of, like little streams in my garden.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was worried about. Okay. All right, well, that's more
clear. And that's also where like the barrier of mint comes in on the one side where I have it. I'm going to have it kind of mounded up with this mint wall that's going to help like have water that's coming off of the yard will kind of hit that and potentially go around the yard or garden. Right.
Okay. And it's interesting because of the way my garden is oriented and the way my land is been formed by nature I almost have the opposite problem, and I'm starting to plan for saving water as opposed to worrying about it draining, because I'm at the crest of a hill. I've got great sun and everything else, and it's a really ideal place, but sometimes the water doesn't stay where you want it to stay. Now, if you were to walk my garden, you would see that, you know, one bed is bordered by potato mounds. On the sloping side down to try to maintain a certain level of things. But now today I've just rigged it so that our laundry or washing machine drains outside through the wall into a garden hose. And I have a 50-gallon barrel that I'm going to get a little spigot kit for, and I'm going to put drip irrigation off of that for the garden, for at least one section of the garden for this year.
And this only works because you don't use chemical detergents for your laundry.
Right, because we do the hippie stuff.
We do the hippie stuff.
Is the beeping on your side or my side?
I think it's on your side.
Oh, my God. You know what it is? So what? I have a little thermometer in with the chickens that are in the room with me, and it's got, like, an alarm on it. They've been pecking at this thing so much.
It's busted.
No, they set an alarm. Oh my God! Let me get this thing out of here. So this is insane.
So as everyone can hear, Lucas now has baby chicks in his
work area. I was going to talk about this later, but yeah, there's 11 new heartbeats in the house. I've only named one, and I'll get into that later. But God damn those little chicks!
Yeah. And the other thing is that another difference between your yard makeup and my yard makeup is I am very, very, very heavy clay. You have a lot more sand up in yours.
Yeah. And another thing we've done, and I was just walking it earlier, I got to do a little more, but the new orchard that we planted, which is also on the downward slope from the garden, because apple trees do like moisture, but they do like well-drained soil as well. So having an orchard on a slope is pretty great, except for when you're trying to level a ladder to pick apples. But
Yes. Well, I mean, you'll notice that most apple orchards are set up on very good slopes.
Yeah, so we're doing pretty well out there. They've grown quite a bit this past year, so I'm excited. No apples yet, but you know, someday. So that's sort of being sort of water wise. Now we talked about that and sort of how to deal with too much water or how to deal with not enough water.
There's a third one, and that's okay. Erosion.
Right. Yes. And this goes into, shrubs and trees. You sent me like a really interesting guide, and I would love to get into like some native plants here in Vermont that are just great for your homestead, your home garden, whatever it is. So
yeah, I kept coming across like sugar maples, great for erosion. Oaks, both white and red oaks, and then the other one was black birch.
Black birch, yeah, and it's funny. So trees, obviously, sugar maple, Acer saccharum, I think. So it's the Vermont tree, right? It produces maple syrup. It's beautiful in the autumn. It can live for hundreds of years, and its dense canopy is just such like a great carbon sucker. But their root structure is to sustain a tree for that large for that because they top out around 50 feet, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. But they get, and they just get, but they get bushy.
Yeah, they have a lot of sprawl, a lot of spread, and what you see above the ground is nearly doubled under the ground in root structure. They are just great for sucking up extra water.
Yep, and then the and then la the other one I kept coming across was, of course, one that I was talking to you about this week, and that's willows.
Yes, and if you're going to do that, if you're going to call that company, I'm picking up my order on Saturday.
Next
So,
Saturday, okay.
the 20th, yeah. Red Oaks,
Well, hey, you're picking up your order, but you don't have a truck anymore, Lucas.
I've got a pretty big, unless you want to drive all the way out to Plainfield, Vermont with us. No, they'll be fine. The biggest one I'm getting is the sugar maple, and it's 8 feet tall. It will fit in the 4Runner. So, and
With it sticking
less.
out the back.
Maybe. I'd rather have it'll be up in the front seat more.
I was like, yeah, I rub the root ball up in the front seat, and then
And there's less damage to the existing leaves that way.
yes, I do.
So.
Yeah, I have found that when I was doing landscape work, that was one of the big things we had to deal with, was when we were transporting trees, even in the trucks, we'd had to make sure that the tops are protected because the wind shear will quickly do damage to trees while traveling.
Yeah. Red Oaks, and real quick, before we get into like the nitty-gritty of these trees, I'm just going to run through my list of what I am picking up on Saturday, which is two witch hazel, which is a shrub, two red oaks, one swamp oak or white oak, four birches, and one sugar maple. Okay. So now let's get back to this list and see, this is where we talk about planning and mitigation and stuff, right? So red oaks, Quercus rubra, I've been learning my trees, is another like super long living tree, and it's again going to draw a lot of water. It is going to hold your soil together when we talk about erosion, and massive amounts of carbon storage. And then Eastern white pine was another native that I came across.
Yeah, I get mine was a Douglas fir.
Okay. How fast growing is Douglas fir? I'm not
They're
sure.
pretty quick. I've got some mine are, I'm pretty sure mine are Douglas. They're at least, they've been around for, I mean, my the one that was planted when I was a toddler is, God, it's at least 30 feet tall, but and it's probably like its reach is probably at least 30 feet.
Yeah, 3 feet per year starting in the 8 to 10 year old range.
Yep. And mine would be, and mine would be even bigger, but as a young kid who used to just play with random crap, I had chains that I used to run around the yard with and act like I was all cool with my chains, and I would like swing up and like hit trees with them, and I hit mine and wrapped it around and pulled too hard and snapped the top like 2 3 feet off.
Oh another great native for Vermont here is witch hazel. Again, it's really tolerant to like a really wide range of soil conditions, which is why I got it. It's going to be near my driveway, sort of, as a windbreak in the driveway. But it also it's very tolerant of low moisture and high moisture. So, and most shrubs really are. They don't. They're good to rough conditions.
Yep.
Let's see. Service berry. I would love to get some service berries on the property.
The one I came across is more. It's more of a very. It's a low level one, but the wild strawberries is great for soil retention and erosion prevention.
Yeah. So is milkweed.
Yes.
So, you know, again, natives doing what they're meant to do, and just sort of that lack of human intervention really goes a long way in saving your property.
Yep.
That makes sense. So let's see. So that kind of goes through some native plants. I really wanted to hit that because, you know, that's just important to me. But and all of these are great for the wildlife here.
Yep.
Every single plant, you know, and there's other stuff, the American bladdernut, and then perennials like black-eyed Susans and milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
So now you wanted to get into – I'm already forgetting – something else.
Well, I did come across a pretty good article about I partially agree about a Vermont Land Trust on helping your forest and designing your forest. Their article had like it was like what you want to do with your forest. Do you want to log it? Do you want to be able to have high quality sawmill? Do you want to be able to mitigate climate change effects? Do you want to just have it transition from the current softwood and young growth to the old growth forests that we used to have?
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about our goals then in that, like what,
yeah, because that's the number one thing on this article I saw was that, like, what are your goals of your forest?
Okay. So what's your goals of your forest?
Is having diversity, foraging for wildlife, and erosion prevention, because I do have a stream that runs through my yard, and with the storms we've had... I've steadily watched it continue to erode the banks out in my woods, which isn't always a bad thing because it's part of the natural cycle of a forest stream area. But I also still want to plant things that's going to help maintain the banks that are still there.
Right. Okay, so that's where why you're thinking about willows.
Yep.
Willow,
more maple, and
right.
And that's also I'm also okay. trying to think of like things that will transition into old growth, and all three of those will also help transition to old growth.
Okay. I have similar goals. I don't have the water issue. I do have a spring that runs across the property. I love it. I encourage it. I have no issues with my spring.
Yeah, mine's a very established stream, so it at points my bank drops about 20 to 30 feet down from like the high point down to the bottom of the stream bed.
We have multiple goals. You know, one thing we talk about all the time is the restoration of the endangered American chestnut. You know, we've got a lot of them and growing more this year from seed. Well, one succeeded out of the seeds, I should say, one out of four. And it's doing really well. Just started hardening it off outside today.
Nice.
And... you know, so preservation of endangered trees is very important to us. But we're also trying to combine two other things, which is one, foraging not only for wildlife, but for ourselves. We are growing plants that will feed us and then will make excellent firewood someday for someone else as they get older. So that is not only the American chestnut, but my 20-something, almost 30 fruit trees. Black walnuts and hazelnuts that are sort of all around the property. Things that we could eat, things that we could make oils from, things that we could just use and eat if we so choose. You know, It might be a while till I have walnuts, but I'm definitely going to have apples every year right now. So I don't really stress too much about it. But the other thing is, I'm planting for firewood. I am adding into the area things that are fast growing but good technical hardwoods like white birch, which is not a popular burning wood. I favor it because of the BTU to ash ratio is actually one of the best, where you get less ash and more heat. So ours is a very diverse planting of trees, and for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, it's every year, we spend hundreds of dollars on more trees and, work cutting down trees to make room for the trees we want. And, we're not like clear cutting anything. We've got a lot of the eastern white pine, which grows really fast and proliferates really fast, but would also create a soil condition where other favorable trees, like long-term growing into old growth, wouldn't, it would take longer. So we're
Yeah,
just sort of
that's one of the things I'm
intervening.
gonna have. I'm gonna be probably doing a lot of. I mean, I'm gonna borderline clear cut a section of my forest because it is just that what that pine there. Nothing else grows there, and I need I if I want long-term viability of my forest, like yes, the pines will proliferate. They'll keep growing, but you can't do anything with them.
And
Well, anything useful with them. Like, yes, you can use it for furniture and it can be used for boards and stuff, but they're also mine are like not big enough. Mine are like they vary in like between like about 2 to 3 inches to like about 5, 6 inches.
Another tree that I'm encouraging for two reasons, and we're going to be getting some to you this season is the aspens. And it has about half the heat value of something like oak. But again, it's fast growing. It's a good way to start my stocks and mix with other woods. It grows incredibly fast. It is a lesser hardwood like the birch. But for my short-term goals, I have to think about that. And then also, when they grow in places that are less than favorable, and we're going to remove them anyway, they are the primary thing that we make our broom handles out of. So it's like a nice, hard, extremely light, and beautiful piece of wood, which I have everywhere right now. So.
You know, in just talking our goals, we pretty much covered every single one of the they have the 7 points of for forest and climate change mitigation with your forest, and that's goals, assembling a they call it assembling a team of foresters and others, which I'm kind of like, meh, you and your tree nursery can pretty much handle that. Having variety of species, letting nature guide your choices, remove invasives, protecting young trees from deer, which if you have having the establishment of already good foraging growth will keep deer from foraging on your young trees.
I mean, I feel like we could talk for half an hour on trap crops and things like that, keeping the animals at bay without chemical intervention.
And then, yeah, the last thing was like monitor and adapt based on your success and failures, which is something we're both also like we pretty much covered all of that in our what our goals are.
It's funny too, because at some point in the next couple of weeks, you're coming up to get some aspen saplings for your street side panel that you want to put in. And I was sort of walking them, and some that are younger than others are taller and thicker, but they're at a completely different location on our property. And I was just like, well, I wonder how these will do at Eric's, So I was like, well, I'm going to walk him through where they are and make sure that that's the right tree, because the one that is directly outside my living room window that I would walk by to get to my woodshed, that one is 5 years old and shorter than one that is on a slope by my driveway. So it's like, I don't know. They're both sections where it should drain really well. I just don't understand why it's taking its time. But yeah, I think we kind of hit all of that. Like, yep. The whys we want to do this, the hows of doing it, and, you know, number seven there, the monitoring of our failures and successes.
Yeah, and then, like, the last thing I came across was that it was just announced late last year. The first meetings are actually in 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks? Or a week and a half, because the 22nd and 23rd, I believe, is the new state program by Governor Scott and then the treasurer called the Resilience Implementation Strategy, which is going to help with, like, planning for, like, community-centered approach, nature-based solutions, infrastructure and design reinforcement, which is going to be huge going forward, because we saw just out of the storms last year how much, like, a non-hurricane event and how much damage we received from that. And how can we make our design and reinforce our roadways and water drainage systems to deal with that stuff. Better early warning systems and efficient responses with events. And then economic and environmental sustainability will be the five goals of this resilient implementation strategy.
I'm so excited for that, and I really need to do more reading on it because I haven't. But
you can sign up to attend the meeting virtually.
Oh, good.
Another and it's only meeting. It's only the first one's a couple weeks away.
Okay, I'll look into that. Yeah. But you said something that reminded me of another reason that I'm planting trees. Oh my God, birds! What are you doing?
That's what they do. They just they make noise. Yeah. Mine are at the squawking stage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, these aren't even. These are probably a week old. So.
Oh yeah. They're actually 2 months old today. Because what day was Valentine's Day?
February 14th.
So yeah, February 14th. So yeah, they're exactly 2 months old today.
Wow. So. But we'll get into the homestead in like just RV. I just want to say another reason we're planting trees is wind. We get really severe wind up here, and I need to have a windbreak. We regularly record gusts of 45 to 50 miles an hour. And, you know, just for the sake of our sanity sometimes in the winter, we need some windbreaks where it's not howling past the house.
Yeah, but I mean, that's part of what I want my one of my goals, because it does. And before it whip for me, it whips through between my garage and my house, and then catches on the eaves on just my window.
Right. So, you know, the northerly corner of my property is where the sugar maple is going to go, which will provide great wind shelter. So. Do we want to talk about the homestead, or do we want to talk about next week's episode?
Let's do next week's episode, because as anxiety driving as like it is, I am excited about the topic because it is something that I bump into constantly in doing research for episodes.
Yeah, and I think it's a good sort of airing of this stuff, because I've been told by a friend and neighbor that she has a hard time listening to our show because it drives her anxiety.
And it sucks that, like, because all we're doing is presenting facts and data about what's going on. And
yeah.
And we're taking the rose-colored glasses off that people still around here and across the globe want to have, which is like it's the climate anxiety.
Yeah. And
it's like I kept bumping into it, because I'm glad I found the resilience implementation strategy thing, because prior to that, like, all the state data and documentation is still solely focused on the carbon footprint stuff. And it's like, yes, that stuff needs to be done, but we're already in the throes of climate change and global boiling and a changing climate. Like, we need mitigation strategies now. Yes, we need to keep reducing our carbon footprint for future generations, but we need help with ideas and stuff to help with what's going on now.
One quick question about the resilience. Is that the Institute for Sustainable Communities, or is this more government-based?
Government. It's government-based.
Okay, okay. I might need to get you to send me the link so I can put it in the episode description. Yeah, and... You know, and we'll talk about these things to our comfort level, but, you know, I do have, you know, I do have anxiety. I do have, I am treated for anxiety, and to drill into stuff like this, gets hard. And I think it's something that we should talk about, with our audience about how to, what it is, what's causing it, and how to deal with it. So I look forward to next week's episode. It'll be a tough one, but I think it's going to be important. On the homestead, let's, I think we sort of traditionally start with you.
And I have bad news this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, maybe I should go first.
Yeah, you should go first. I have bad news this week. I have, like, really bad news, but.
Yeah. So, well, the sun is out. I mean, it snowed last night here. I don't know about you.
It did not snow on my side of the mountain.
You know, obviously we've already sort of let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. I've got 11 chickens in the office here with me, that are, just very cute and, just making a huge mess. The cat and the dog are pretty cool about it. The dog doesn't like it when we are in here with the chicks, but other than that, he doesn't
get it. It's attention stealing. Come on. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
Dude, come on. Dusty is jealous. Like, he's like, no, you cannot give attention to those little fuzzy things. You know, I could eat those. Do you know I could eat those?
You know, and he did try to eat a duck in years past. And our ducks are coming next month. But yeah, we're just sort of moving our efforts outside. Not really a whole lot to announce or anything. We're just a little bit over a month away from the start of the Berkshire Artisan and Farmers Market. We are just under a month away from Mother's Day when we'll be at the Norwich Farmers Market. Meg is working her fingers to the bone on brooms and linens and stuff like that. You know, while I'm going to go after this, I'm going to, you know, continue to hang laundry and pick up deadfall around the property.
I've been watching people do yard work and stuff, and I'm just like, so I walked the dog this morning, and most of my yard, it's like stepping on a sponge. And it's a wet, when you're stepping on a wet sponge at that, because you know when you like you squeeze down on a wet sponge and the water just comes out? Yeah, that's my yard right now. So like, I'm not doing anything out there right now. I'm just looking at it, just being like,
No, you do more harm than good starting early with that kind of stuff.
The next week looks like it's going to be, it should hopefully for me dry out a lot. We look like we have a good 4 days without rain and warm temperatures. So, I mean, the weather's looking good. I may put out some of my starters outside during the day if I can keep my chickens from nibbling on them.
We have been doing that. Like I said, I think earlier the hazelnut – the American chestnut went out for an hour today for its burst. It's about 8 inches tall now with these massive leaves, like full-size leaves. Like I have never grown a tree from seed, and it's the same size leaves as our established – chestnut trees. And I was just like, okay, well, I guess these are going to turn into branches. I don't know how this really works.
It's going to be fun to watch. I've grown from seed a long time ago. Like, it used to be like one of the things you did in like elementary, middle school, like science experience. So it's a very, very interesting process of how it goes.
Yeah, so I'm really enjoying it so far. And then most of our brassicas, our tomatoes, and like our berries and stuff are doing about 2 hours today. And we'll just continue to do 2 hours a day on those, 1 hour a day for a week, and then we'll start increasing until they go in the ground.
The jalapenos, like, they're growing, but like they're just getting bushier. Like, they're not getting tall. Like, my tomatoes are like almost 4 inches tall now. Some of them. But like my peppers are still like, they're only an inch tall, but they're definitely putting off leaves, but they're like an inch tall.
Mine are doing, they're, well, it depends on the pepper. Like, the Jedis are huge and really doing very well. I'm excited. I might actually do like a Jedi as an indoor plant this winter, just to be able to pick them off and do stuff like that. And maybe some ahis as well, because they're just such pretty peppers. That, you know, we're going to have plants that are food, that are house plants. That is our big fight against winter now, is we're going to have house plants that are food. So, which is, you know, not, I don't know. You don't really see that in a lot of people's houses. I'm sure people do it, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you do. I mean, it's more, I mean, how do you think AeroGarden got so popular?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm just going to have a potted pepper in the house, you know, but yeah, I think that's about it. I'm an elected official now in my town. It is interesting, to say the least. And it's going to be a very interesting 3 years of my term, I think. So, well, Eric, shall we talk about your experience over the last week?
Yeah, so I had what all chicken farmers dread, and something got into the coop.
Yeah.
I lost 4 birds. I'm lucky I only lost 4 birds. 2 birds that were left, they were fine. And 1 bird was missing first thing. So this happened on Tuesday morning. I woke up to, I walked the dog and started noticing feathers around and a lack of chickens in the coop.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, started walking around and started finding feathers around. After I walked the dog, I then was, like, standing in there looking out at the yard. And I'm like, oh, there's a chicken, dead chicken over there. Great. And then so I only found one of the dead chickens. So 3 of them are gone.
Right.
And then the one that was missing but was found, I actually found it on the other side of my stream, halfway up the bank. And the bank is like a very steep bank with brush on it. And like, she's just kind of like tucked up under a little bush. And like, definitely had been attacked, because like, she had blood on her back and like just clumps of her feathers around. But she made it. And like, I went to try to grab her, and she kind of like ran away from me and then got to the top of the bank and then like stopped and like let me just like pick her up and carry her. She's like, you know, screw this. She's like, I'm done fighting. Like, I'm just like, whatever. We walked and we had a good little walk home and walked home and put her in the coop where she belongs.
Yeah, that's a tough loss too.
Especially after all the other, like I'm calling it the trickle down effect of my coop.
Yeah. Yeah, like, your coop is in disrepair, it sounded like, when we had lunch the other day.
Yes, so I had the, so halfway through the winter, when the ground was frozen, opening and closing the door warped and then snapped in half. So I only had half a door.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really been doing anything, because they get up in the coop and they hadn't seemed bothered and wanted to do anything. And then, yeah, something finally figured out that door was not there and messed with my birds.
Yeah. Well, and you've got, what, 8 more?
No, I have 4. There's 14.
14 more, yeah. So
yes. I have 14 more, so I'll have 17 total. And, I mean, I still really can't tell 100% which ones are roosters and which ones aren't.
Right.
Like, they're just being, like, I'm – and I'm also, like – Because when you pick up, like, certain ones will stay close by and, like, mess with me when I'm messing with them, and others will, like, run away. So it's, like, it's hard to catch all 14 and tell, like... And they're also, like, so many of them are just all black and look the same. So mm-hmm. it's like, all right, did I check you already? I can't tell if I checked you already. Like, I don't know, like... So I gave up, and, like, when they're fully grown, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, but you should be moving them out pretty soon.
I mean, they're... It'll be a little bit longer because they're still very much in. They haven't gotten their third molt yet.
Right.
So they're still very much like they're starting to get more bigger crests. They're starting to get a little bit of waddles on them. But okay. Yeah, their third coat or third molt hasn't happened yet. So they're still very much like in their second molt of like that kind of transitionary. Like they're not chicks, but they're not chickens. They're in the middle.
Yeah, I've got just like tips of feathers or like first growth feathers starting to show up. But oh my God, I forgot just how fast these baby chicks grow. Like, you know, you can literally watch them grow almost when they do that big wing stretch where they also stick their leg out. I'm like, yeah, you just elongated, didn't you?
Yeah, mine are about the, like, you know, the size of like the Nerf footballs.
Uh-huh.
That's about how big they are.
Yeah, mine are about this big. My little wooden otter.
Yes, yours are still very tidy. Yes.
Yeah.
So in 2 months, mine are about Nerf football sized.
Yeah.
So, I mean, bad and good. So I have more on the way. So it's not as devastating as it could have been. I mean, it sucks because I did lose my rooster. Mm-hmm. Jimmy was awesome. And I also lost one of my favorite hens, which was Roadrunner.
Oh.
So it was probably just my second favorite hen was the one that I found and saved. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it really sucks, and obviously we've talked about this at length, and you know that I'm sympathetic and empathetic, yes. But yeah, it really sucks.
Far through the course.
And you know, it's one of those things we're going to talk about climate anxiety, but there's like a certain amount of like anxiety and how, like how much it hurts for this stuff to actually happen. Like if you're listening to this because you're thinking about doing it someday or, learning about what this is all about, it's about losing, you know, a bunch of chickens in one night and being powerless to do anything about it.
That reminded me of something I want to do a future episode on, of the why if you want to save the bees, you shouldn't become a backyard beekeeper.
Oh yeah, I had a really interesting conversation with a beekeeper about that. I wonder if I could get him on the show. I do have his card.
I've been seeing a number of articles on environment and a couple other subreddits about that.
Yes.
We should do an episode on that because it's a good point.
Yeah, Farmer James out in Bethel. He is really interesting guy.
Is he the guy who does the honey and the candles?
He does do some candles. Yes, I think. I think I've only been at one market, where we were both there.
I wonder if he's the guy that like he's always at Norwich in the summer, and he always has like he has his three things at his booth: maple syrup, honey, and beeswax candles.
Yeah. So Farmer James, some folks around here refer to him as the Black Beekeeper. So I don't know if that helps.
Probably not the guy I'm thinking of.
Yeah. So, but him and I had kind of bonded at the holiday market. And over some, we're about the same age and had like the same sort of youth. We really both liked LSD when we were younger. That reminds me, one last thing. I did name one of the chickens. It is a little early, I understand. But so we used to have a blue copper Moran. in our last flock. Beautiful, like blue bird, right? And we have another blue Coppermurrán this time. And I kept jokingly calling it Blue 2 Electric Boogaloo. And I've sort of shortened that down to Boogie. So I have a chicken named Boogie.
Out of my 14, I do have one named one, but that's because he's kind of like, he's special.
Right, he's yeah.
Gimpy with his broken leg.
Right, yeah. So it is a little early.
He's a happy guy. Like, he just eats. He doesn't get bullied by his brothers and sisters. And
yeah,
it's funny because, like, I know they're hens, but I still refer to them as guys.
Yeah, it's funny. Meg corrects me every time. I'm like, you know, but I do come home and I say, how are the girls? You know,
yeah.
But I do, like, I keep like, look at this little guy, you know, yeah. And you know, they don't care.
They don't care. They just like they, I go down there and they peck my shoes when I'm giving them water.
Yeah. All right. So, next week we'll be back on the 16th with an episode sort of on climate anxiety and mental health around homesteading a little bit. And, if you want to reach out to the show, you can email us at brokenshovel802.com. You can also find us on Reddit at /r/brokenshovel802. And if you want to hear about these brooms that we're making, or see these brooms that I'm always talking about, actually, you're going to want to go to brokenshovel802.com. And I got a text message from Meg, who is, you know, 100 feet away from me. She went out this morning and cut down some lilac stalks, and they're purple. The wood is purple. We're going to have some purple handled brooms. I'm assuming it's going to stay purple. The text message just says it's purple exclamation point. So I'm assuming she's talking about the lilac. So that's it. That is the show. Eric, you got any parting words?
Nope, no. I got nothing. Nothing. I mean, there is going to be very much I want to give the warning now of, like, next week's episode is going to be a little on the grim side. And
yeah. And I don't mean, even we call it grim, but heavy.
Heavy, yeah. And I mean, it's going to be heavy. I mean, we will talk probably at the end of it about a little bit about how you can personally help mitigate the anxiety from this stuff, which, yeah, we'll get into all of it.
Yeah, next week. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Very much a warning for next week's episode that is not going to be sunshines and roses.
Yes. No, it won't. But I'll tell you about the baby chicks.
We will tell you about the baby chicks. And so I've got the dog cage in their room. Mm-hmm. And it's like a full-size dog cage because I put Pixel in there.
Yeah.
And they are now jumping high enough and such that they're perching on top of that dog cage.
Oh, nice. These ones are already perching. I made like a little thing out of sticks.
They will perch quick. They will perch. They like – and that's just like it's one of those things. If you make them a perch – it's like if you build it and they will come.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. I think we'll be back next week. And thanks for listening and watching. If you're watching on YouTube, thanks for doing that. Yeah. Looking at this.
Yeah.